when someone comes in and resigns, I'm not going, you know, shit, you know, like I've lost a good... It's like, wow, where are you going next? If you want a job, work from home. If you want a career, come to the office. To me, it was more like Hansel and Gretel and the breadcrumbs, to be honest.
Yep.
Is that one thing led to another. There was no light bulb moment and go, oh my God, I've seen a gap in the market.
Welcome to the Make It Happen show. I'm Tim Morris, the CEO at The Entourage, and I'm so excited to bring you another fantastic interview with lots of insights you can implement into your business. Let's get into it. Tony Nash, it is so good to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm good. Good to be back. Good to be back in the Entourage's offices and hanging out with real people, not online, doing everything digital.
You can sort of almost reach over and touch, although we're not allowed to do that yet these days. Yeah, so good to have you back on the show. We've had you in a number of events sort of over the last 2 years. You're always an Entourage crowd favourite, so I'm looking forward to covering some new ground today. To kick us off, you've been in business for a while now, like Booktopia itself is almost 2 decades, but then you had a number of businesses before that. What are some of the key lessons to make it happen over all that time?
Well, I remember when I started my first company when I was 33, and having worked for someone before, I think the dawning of the, oh my God, I have to pay for everything. Like you got an in-tray of rent, wages, internet, you know, all the things that you've got to pay for. And it's like, someone else handled that before. So that was quite, I remember at the time it was quite confronting. So that transition was interesting. And then leadership, just having never had a team before as well. So I was a recruiter for the IT industry. Maybe I had a resource support person, but I never had teams of people. So so to then consider all the talent, you know, being the circus manager, and having to deal with all the professionals, all of the talent, all the people with different agendas and skills, took a while, and I was pretty hopeless at it, quite frankly, in the beginning.
any of the mistakes that you made along the way that you're happy to share?
I think the main thing when I started my first company, which was in recruitment, I was very self-motivated, and I didn't need my manager in my previous company to manage me. I was, you know, I wanted to be the best. I was focused. I worked hard. And then to realize that not everyone had the same motivations as me to earn as much money as I could and be the best in the company or the best in the industry. So to realize that, you've got to actually have different kind of leadership skills to look at that and then work out, are they actually even right for the industry? So I had a lot of failures of recruiting salespeople for me in the beginning.
And this time around, though, you obviously feel comfortable building that sales team and leading them. Is it just because you got more confident in the whole business and how the industry works, or like what's changed that this time around it's fine?
This time around, the opportunities come to us. And so it's a soft sell. It's then really good account management. Mm. So there is still cold calling, and there's kind of building the business, but there is a lot of opportunities coming to us and to them I feel comfortable, and I've got a very good national sales manager, so
yeah,
she is all over it, and therefore having the right people in place to lead that team,
yeah,
and give them the space to operate is, you know, I think that's more
that's
important.
Helpful. Yeah. Touch on leadership principles and kind of your leadership style. You know, sometimes when we touch on this topic with some guests, I'm like, do you have a particular leadership style? And they're like, oh, I don't really think about that. I'm just me. And I'm very, very, I just try to be genuine. That's how I lead. And other people are actually, no, I give a lot of thought to how I lead and the kind of leadership style that I want to cultivate. Kind of what end of the spectrum do you sit on there?
More the, I don't have a style.
Yeah.
My main thing is about empowering people. So they know the context that they need to operate within, they can create the content.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where you've got to operate from, and just, you know, make it happen. I mean, that's the name of the show. So I think from my style is mostly allowing people to be empowered, but also I do want to know, having come from recruitment, I want to know that when they came into our organization and when they left, that they are of far more value to themselves, their families, and wherever they go next. Interestingly enough, when someone comes in and resigns, I'm not going, you know, shit, you know, like I've lost a good... It's like, wow, where are you going next?
Yeah.
Because I pinched people from other companies and put them in other companies. So I know that that's how the world works.
Yeah.
And therefore, I don't come from a fear of losing somebody and I'm trying to hold on to them.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, people who've been in relationships and you know the relationship is over, but they're doing everything they can to kind of keep that relationship going, and you lose all your... you lose your empowerment. The power goes to the person who's really kind of wanting to get out. Employees are a bit similar like that. You don't want to, you just got to let them go on their journey. And sometimes they stay because you listen to them and you go, oh, that's what you're looking for. Okay, well, we can create that for you. That's interesting that you wanted that skill, or you're not doing enough of that. Or, I'm sorry, I can't give that to you. So I think that's an important aspect. Yeah.
Good mental shift that if someone comes in and says, I'm leaving, you go, okay, is the job you're moving to at least way better? And they go, yes, it is. You go, well, well done.
That's right. That's it. That's right. And also right now, actually in this time in 2022, for those that are listening, I've said to my, because we're doing our FY23 budgets.
Yep, I
said,
same.
I said, if someone comes to us and says they're leaving and they're going to get paid more, do not match them. Because that's insulting to the person who's your employee. Well, why the hell didn't you pay me more at the time? Like, if someone, if we're not paying them enough in FY23 budgeting, then if they leave, then that's our decision, because we could only pay them as much as we could pay them.
Yep. Yeah, this is exactly a process I'm going through right now, doing the FY23 forecast. We're doing performance reviews across the business, and you know, we are hiring at the moment as well. And yeah, trying to get it all right. And my philosophy here is like, you just got to try and get it so everything's fair and right. And so the review process is fair, and then the increases that people get is fair, and the people that are coming in, they're getting offered fair money compared to all the people that are already here who have given a lot of commitment. Because otherwise, when you start playing games and you start sort of reacting to the market too much, you have disparity, and that comes out and it causes problems. And, you know, this cycle might not last forever. It, you know, we look at what's happening in Europe and the US, may last for a very short period of time in terms of the how illiquid the labour market is. And so you've got to make decisions now that you know you're going to have to live within 6 months or 12 months, and I think you just got to be fair.
I'm with you on that. Yeah. And it's interesting walking into the office. It's been a while since I've been in here because of lockdowns and doing everything digitally. How many people are here now? I don't know what your policy is.
Yep.
Is it a policy where you must come to work, or is it a policy where people go, actually, I want to be at work because that's where all the action is, and we're in the same situation. We actually we have offices, plenty of office space where we are adjacent to our distribution center, but we just took some more corporate offices in Rhodes in the business park in Sydney.
Yeah.
Why? Because we want to have a place that people actually really want to come to.
Yeah.
And it's a gorgeous build that they did, great environment, and everyone's saying, I love coming to work. And to me, it's very counterintuitive to what's happening in the world, where people are going, all right, everyone's working from home, let's scale back the size of our office. People are going to hot desk, come in. Like, but to me, you've got to, you know, it's a bit of Field of Dream, build it and they will come kind of situation. Right. I think that's really, really important that companies consider that you want to create an environment, because getting together is where it's all happening. It's like I was at an event last week. I was speaking at an event for entrepreneurs and so forth. If that was online versus just being together, it was in Melbourne, right? It's like it was – like the energy was tangible. And that's the same in the office.
Yeah.
And I think people need, and companies and leaders need to understand that you've got to create that environment, because that's where all the magic is happening.
Yeah. Yeah, what we've done is we kind of listen to what everyone was saying. We also look at what actually works for our business. We are a young, dynamic, people-focused business. And there's just no question about it. We work better when we're together. And so what we've said is that it's Monday and Friday, all the teams are in the office. Mondays, we kick off with a Monday morning meeting, the entire business, every single week. We always do it. It's one of our key rituals. So having everyone together for that is fundamental. That was one of the hardest things to do on Zoom over, you know, all the COVID years. And then Friday, at the end of the day, Friday, first of all, by far the most deals get done on a Friday, right? It just naturally builds into a crescendo then. And having everyone together and celebrating together is really important. But we also mark the end of the week with another cultural ritual called Made It Happen. as opposed to make it happen, the show, which is celebrating the week that was, right? And again, doing that together is just so important for the culture of the business. And I'm starting to think that, yeah, like to your point, let's make it great. Let's make it so people want to come in, they've got more room. And so, yeah, we're trying to balance a bit of what do people want? How do they work best? How do we give a bit of flexibility? How do we have some consistency so you know where the hell everyone is? And that's what we've landed on. It seems to work for us. Seems to work for us. Mm. What about, so the what are you doing particularly to make it a great environment for everyone to come to? What are some of the things that you're doing at Booktopia?
Well, I wasn't involved in the design, which probably helped.
look, it's likewise.
It's a great view. It's a great view looking towards the city and also looking towards the mountains.
Yeah.
And the space is very, very modern, funky. The meeting rooms have all got names from books that have been like you know, Narnia or Hogwarts, or so they're like they're cool. Kind of places in famous books.
Yeah.
So Pemberley and therefore all the rooms have these nice names with great artwork from those books that are on the walls.
Yeah.
Cool. So there's really nice indigenous art around the place. So there's a feel of being contemporary and understanding the land on, you know, which we're working. How important that is. The studios, of course, to do recording, breakout areas.
A lot of other businesses are not going in that direction. A lot of other businesses are not celebrating where they are and what their employees are going to be able to access. They're just like, okay, if everyone's working from home, how do we downsize? And yeah, I think they're missing a real trick. So there's obviously it's tumultuous times at the moment, right? So on the employee market for sure, but there's other big sort of macro things happening. What are you seeing coming up, or what are you watching out for? Because I know you're a big proponent of like really look into the future and zig while others zag. What are you seeing out there?
In particular, I think as a recruiter and thinking about why people want to work for a company, it's like, well, hold on a second. Where is this really going to happen? And and I know Ruslan Kogan did mention it, but I think he repeated it from somewhere else. Mm. And that was, if you want a job, work from home. If you want a career, come to the office. Because there's a lot that happens. Like how much, even here at the Entourage, how much happens where you're an earshot of a really cool conversation, which you go, oh, I like what they said. And then you integrate that into your own way of operating. There's things that happen. And if you want to be seen, or if there's a project coming up and the boss or your team leader or whoever knows of you, like, and you're at the office because they got to get a... But if you're at home, you're invisible. Quite frankly, I believe a lot of the time. So there's that part of, you know, where are things moving? In terms of business, I mean, I think about books, obviously. I think about selling online and books and where is that happening. And so I look at that societal shift. I'm looking to see where is that wave coming from so I can be on the wave. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm not a surfer, but as a surfer, like they're sitting at the back of the waves and going, yeah, there it is right there. To me, they're all just little lumps. Mm. But in business or in the book industry in particular, I take that view of, okay, when's that wave? How's it going to be building? Where do I need to be in position to ride that?
Mm.
And then and if you look at Booktopia, I mean, when we were turning over $5 million, which was maybe around 2008, something in like 2008,
mm-hmm.
There are others turning over 5 million.
Mm.
So what was it? How did we get to 240 mil?
Mm.
And the next, other than Amazon, right, is under 20 mil. What do we do? It was because we really focused on that wave and where are things heading and where our customers want to be.
Yeah.
And just getting a feel. It's almost like it's a feel. I'm sure that's surfing. I know you said before you're a surfer. Surfer.
This is an analogy I can 100% get behind. You're right. It is about like the difference between a passionately intermediate surfer like myself and a very, very good surfer is their wave selection. And it's what they do is they just pay so much more attention. There's intuition and experience, you know, 10,000 waves or whatever, but they're also like cognitively paying attention to what's coming, swimming to the right spot and then getting on that wave that no one else is kind of going for. I often say to our members, smaller businesses, couple of $1 million revenue, that in any sort of anything that's going on, any big shift, whether it's COVID or a recession or a boom time, whatever, there's so many opportunities in there for a small to medium sized business to, like, you can paddle to that, get that opportunity, and no one else is going for it. And so it sounds like that's what you've done over the last 20 years with Booktopia. It's like there were all these waves there, but you paid attention to it, you paddled to the right ones, and that's what's gotten you ahead. Love this analogy.
Yeah, and also, like, one of the things I liked about, I mean, I've seen that documentary on the big wave surfers, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right, which is really daunting. And like,
that's not my kind of surfing.
Yeah, like, it's like, like, you are nuts. But what I did like about the book industry in particular is that the barrier to entry was really high. So there's 30 million active books, 30 million SKUs in our industry. There's publishers who are very staid, and it's a very, very old industry. So there was a lot of old thinking that they couldn't see what was going on. Knowing how to do internet marketing, which was our business before I started Booktopia, so to know how to drive traffic to a site, knowing how to sell. I was a computer programmer. My brother-in-law was a computer. So we had no fear around creating tech. So what I liked about it was that it was a high barrier to entry. So, like, is it a big? Are you doing Hawaii big wave surfing, or is it something that anyone can jump on? Mm. Like, well, I'm down at the beach with the kids, and I'm just going to grab the boogie board, and we're going to do a bit of body surf. You know, well, anyone can get on a wave like that. So then, how are you going to compete if anybody can catch that one?
Yep.
And then, are you going to ride it all the way in? Are you going to be wiped out? It's a really important. I would really encourage those that are listening to consider that and to understand how that works, because there's a lot in terms of how businesses succeed. I mean, if you think about who's saw what or how they, how entrepreneurial were they and what was the opportunity, because plenty of people we've got tons of historical stories where someone came up with the idea, but somebody else executed it. And therefore, what was going on there? Why didn't they have the skills, the experience to ride it all the way through, whereas others others can.
Yeah. It's like, you go out in summer to one of these beaches in southeastern Sydney, and there's freaking everyone there. It's chaos in the water. There's a lot of competition, and you can have an awful, awful session out because it's just too busy. And then compare that to go a little bit further afield in winter when the swells are big. There's almost no one out there. It's a lot more difficult, but those are the days where you have an amazing surf because you risk a bit more, you take a bit more of a chance. And this analogy is holding up really, really well. And so to get into books, right, was your key differentiator, you knew that you could drive traffic, you could do it in a way that the current people weren't doing it. Was it as clear as that for you, or it was a bit of a hunch, or how did that unfold?
Yeah, so we were So before Booktopia, there was internet marketing. And when I say we, it was my brother, my sister, my brother-in-law.
Mm.
So that's working with family, which is another podcast. So we had an internet marketing business. Before that, we had an internet software business. Mm. And before that, we had the IT recruitment company, of which 2 years in is when I recruited my family to join me. So we had that kind of trajectory. We had done a job to get Angus and Robertson to the top of Google, and so therefore we had already been introduced to the book industry, and Angus and Robertson outsourced their website and fulfillment to another company in Sydney, and they manage 80 bookstores websites. And so my brother, who'd done that project, set up a meeting to pitch the idea of, hey, we got Angus and Robertson to the top of Google. Why don't you introduce us to all your other customers, and we'll help them get to the top of Google? And they weren't interested, you know. And they said we manage websites, we fulfill book orders. That's what we do. And I asked, well, how does the whole thing work? And they said, look, it takes 10 minutes to set up a store. You give us the name of your store, and then within 10 minutes there'll be a website with 1 million books on there. And if you sell anything, we pay a commission. And I said, well, that sounds interesting. And they said, yeah, we know it does, but no internet-only business has made anything out of it. It's all been off the back of a traditional bookstore. So I went away from that meeting, came up with the name Booktopia, told them within 10 minutes they had set up the store. It was the same day that Facebook started, not that we knew it on the day.
Well-timed.
Yeah. And so then it was more – to me, it was more like Hansel and Gretel and the breadcrumbs, to be honest.
Yep.
Is that one thing led to another. There was no light bulb moment and go, oh, my God, I've seen – a gap in the market. It was literally, we had an internet marketing company. So it was more going to be like, oh, this is a nice little extra income stream.
Yep.
that maybe we'll just kind of tick along, and that, well, that'd be great for us with our business. And then it got bigger and bigger. And so without any planning, within a few years, our revenue was $2 million. And we thought maybe someone might want to buy Booktopia. But the other company did the website. The other company did the fulfillment. So we could see we're just more of a marketing front rather than a real solid business. And that's when we decided to go out and do it ourselves. So the other company helped us get going. They no longer exist. And so we went on and you know, basically took over.
They missed their greatest opportunity with you guys. I love the Hansel and Gretel analogy you did there. Like, I often, that's like you just follow the breadcrumbs and it kind of turns into something. There is a real, people mistakenly think that great ideas are that bolt out of the blue. You know, the whole Newton under the tree and the apple falls and hits him on the head, where it's actually, I often talk about it being the slow hunch. You kind of, there's something there, you can kind of like kind of feel it, and it almost bubbles up, then it goes away for a little while. Then you see something else, you're like, oh, da, 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 and then maybe it finally comes into existence in a flash, but it's because you've been thinking about it for so long. That kind of looks at it more like the idea bubbles up, you get it, and then you do something about it, whereas you're saying, no, you're just kind of like one step after another, and then something comes from it. I think those are both much better ways of looking at it than the lightning bulb just turning on and then you go. It also connects with what we're talking about, like picking the right wave and kind of like, well, particularly the slow hunch theory, like picking the right way, seeing what's happening in the market and doing it right. What are some of the kind of markers you're seeing out there at the moment? Like, what are you attuned to help you guys catch the next right wave or take the next right step towards the next breadcrumb?
So I'm very horizon point driven, which if you think about Hansel and Gretel going after the next breadcrumb, you can't get to $200 million in revenue if you didn't start at $2 in revenue or $200 and $2,000 and so forth. So it's about understanding what that next horizon point is. So when I think about the growth of Booktopia, I mean, we are the only company ever to make the AFR Fast 100 eight times. Is like, it's easy to maybe make it once or twice, but to continually be on that list because you're growing at 25% is really complex. So to be very horizon point driven is in my opinion the key. So to give people an example, when we were turning over $20 million, and you can look, there's a website called archive.org, and on that is the Wayback Machine. So you can actually look at HTML photographs of websites, what they look like in the beginning. So you can actually see what we looked like on the third day. But if you go back to, I think it was around 2010 or 11, we knew that our website was due for an upgrade and it had been for some time. So one of the mums at my son's primary school was a web designer. And so I gave her the challenge of redoing our site. I'd seen her work, so I knew she was good. And the brief to her was, it's very simple. We're turning over $20 million.
Yeah.
And when someone comes to our new website and you ask somebody one question and they've never heard of us before, how much revenue do you think these guys are doing? The answer needs to be $100 million.
Mm.
That was the brief.
Great.
So, brief. Right. So therefore, she went away and created something where that's what I wanted, because you feel the vacuum of that, and therefore that sets the tone. So for me, we're at $240 million in revenue, and right now it's like, okay, what have we got to do to get to $300 million? And then from 300 will be to 400, 400 to 500, and through that, as long as you're profitable, you've got more money at the end of the month than more month at the end of the money. you'll be in a sustainable position, and I think that's one of the things. When you kind of like, when you're asking me that question, and I think about starting off and how we got to where we are today, is making sure that there was enough cash being created. So we kept our internet marketing business until 2009. So after 5 years, we were slowly, in those last couple of years, not taking any more clients and just letting it whittle away because we were making enough money to pay ourselves. So making sure that you have the cash coming through, perhaps not from the most exciting or the thing that you're really like, your big vision and plan for your business, but you got these boring part of your business that that just, you know, that brings in 10,000 a month or 20,000 a month, but it doesn't fire you up.
Mm.
but it's paying for you or your rent or whatever.
I talk about horizons as well a lot, like Horizon 1, which is just the current business, you know, the McKinsey model, and what's Horizon 2 and what's Horizon 3. And, yeah, Horizon 1 is like the core business. You just defend and extend slowly. It keeps everything else going. And it might not be the sexy stuff, but it keeps the lights on and it lets you do all the other things. And it's a lesson that we actually learned years and years ago when we did take our eye off a core part of our business to go in another direction. And that didn't work out too well. And we turned back to the core business. We're like, uh-oh, we kind of let this get in pretty bad shape. And so it's a lesson I've sworn I'll never, ever repeat that mistake again, which means, Horizon 1, core business, keep it going, and that will let you do everything else.
Yeah, there's a couple of things there that you, as you say that, makes me, I want to share with the listeners. First of all, pay yourself the salary that you would if you were retired and you needed to hire someone. Mm-hmm. Because if you want to sell your business, a lot of entrepreneurs do, they're going to build it up and then be in a position to either sell it mm-hmm. or keep it and get a dividend because they've retired and they go, it is what it is. And because what happens is when someone comes through to buy your business, mm-hmm. they're just going to right size your salary. So if you've got yourself on 60K or 80K, but you know that it's really a 250K MD role or a 200K role or 100, right? They're going to just, whatever you think, oh, it's making this much profit and you've been paying yourself 80K and it's a 180K role.
Yeah.
Right. They're going to just take 100K off the profit. Mm. So you may as well pay yourself. Yep. Like I have a mate who was paying his sales director a certain number, and then at the end of the year, he giving the guy a massive bonus. And I said, "So would you give that to him every year?" "Oh yeah, of course." I said, "Well, he and his wife can't count on that because it's a bonus. So why don't you just pay him?" And he goes, "That's a really good point." So that's one of the things that I wanted to share. Now, the other one I wanted to share was, so when Booktopia was I think around 2015, we bought Angus and Robertson. Mm-hmm. So now we can say we're 130 years old, right?
Well done.
And we also bought a camera business because I'm into photography and I knew a bit about it. And I realized through that process, a bit like what you were doing, is that you actually need to put as much energy into a new vertical as you're doing on your current one. It's like, because things need to start up and you got to get going. And it's like, and I started to do some research around the world because Amazon hadn't come to Australia yet. They only came a couple of years later. And I thought, what is it in North America and Europe where companies are flourishing in an Amazon mature environment? Mm. Everywhere I looked, it's because they focused on one thing and did it really well. Mm-hmm. And so people ask me, why don't you get into selling other things? Mm. And we could, but it's going to have this, you're going to put the same amount of energy, different suppliers, different supply chains, all these things. So we, at that time, then got into distribution and then into publishing. So as a distributor, Amazon has to buy from us because we're representing publishers from around the world and locally. Mm. And we are it. We buy from ourselves. Dimmix buys from us and so forth.
So it's more things but within your industry that you have deep knowledge about and you're just kind of like expanding that way. It does open up a question that I wanted to ask. So talking about like international markets and, you know, Booktopia focusing on Australia and going deeper in Australia, has there been the allure to try and go into international markets? Is it something that you have thought about and discounted? Is it still on the road ahead? Just love to hear your thinking.
Yeah, road ahead. So right now, e-commerce in 2022 is getting an absolute hammering. Like our share price, I mean, our market cap's gone from 350, almost 400 mil down to 50 mil.
Wow. Right?
And Redbubble, Temple & Webster, Kogan, Adore Beauty, everyone's been smashed. Amazon's been smashed all around the world. So it's about riding the wave. Mm-hmm. We're not...
Or in this case, just riding through the white water. Well, just getting hammered.
It's actually more like, to me, thinks about... the way I think about it is being in the Tasman Sea and that you're on a peak, you're in a trough. You're in a peak, you're in a trough. And right now, everyone's just going down into the trough.
Yeah.
Our business is growing. Our revenue is growing. We're profitable. We've got cash. So to me, it's about riding out the storm, getting to the other side, and therefore... international markets right now, we just need to make sure we batten down the hatches, get through the storm to the other side, and then we can start looking at options once our market cap will increase. It's an amazing time to buy e-commerce stocks. I think it still will go for another year or so. I can't see it the storm abating just yet. I think it's going to still be a little while, but in particular around supply chains, I think our supply chains need to kind of work their way back to where they were. That's still very disruptive.
Such an amazing sort of unintended, unexpected consequence of the last couple of years is supply chains and how much that's just wreaking havoc in all sorts of industries, not just e-commerce, but like the building industry. It'll be a long time until we're kind of through all these aftershocks. And another really great area of conversation we will not have time on is public markets. Like what's it been like listing and then obviously dealing with the consequences, but we can't get into that area. We definitely don't have time. I do have a couple more questions that we need to get through that we call Make It Happen in a Minute. Mm-hmm. And we have five questions here that we try to go through in reasonably rapid fire. You ready to get into it?
Fire away.
All right, Tony. Question number one. If you could have written any published book in history, what book would that be?
Probably To Kill a Mockingbird. It's my favourite fictional
book.
Title.
Yep.
From a non-fiction, anything that Brené Brown is writing and publishing, astonishing thinker and author.
Yeah.
What an incredible contribution she's made.
Yeah, yeah, I've read some of her books. They're amazing. And do you remember when you – this is not one of the questions. Do you remember when you first read To Kill a Mockingbird?
I think it was in school, I've read it a number of times since, which has meant more to me as I've got older, rather than having to read it versus reading it by choice.
Yeah, great. Question number two, what is something every new entrepreneur these days needs to be wary of?
In my opinion, there's a lot of people that I meet that go, oh, you were so lucky you got in early, you know, with the internet and with e-commerce, or you were at the first e-commerce event, or you did the entourage back then. The truth is that what people need to understand is like, it's important to keep that perspective that now is now and it's a massive opportunity in comparison. So don't to kind of think that you've missed out or that so much has happened since.
Mm. Oh, well, you see amazing new businesses, you know, pop up all the time where you're like, first of all, I see a whole bunch of them like, how has that not been a thing before? But yeah, there's new opportunity every day.
Mm. My deputy CEO, or actually stepping further out of the business these days, Wayne Baskin, his best mate, would come in and see us quite often. And he had a little online jewelry business.
Mm.
And he came in and saw us as he would normally do. And I said, mate, how's it going? He goes, oh, Tony, I've got this idea that at the checkout, if you could just pay for the product and get it delivered to you, but then pay it off over four easy payments. And I said, Nick, that is a ripper of an idea.
Yeah.
That is brilliant. Did Nick Molnar ask me to invest in Afterpay? No, he did not, which is really – no, I'm just kidding. But as soon as he said it to me, that was a ripper of an idea.
That's great.
And that was 2011 or 12 or whenever he came up with it. So there's ideas happening all the time. People need to be reminded of that.
Yeah, yeah. Be ready to catch the wave. Question number three, if you could go back in time and redo one thing in Booktopia's journey, what would that be and why?
Probably not buy the camera business, but then you wouldn't have had all the lessons. So there's just so many things that are very costly. Like we tried to list in 2016 and we spent $2 million preparing with lawyers and accounting firms, and we were getting ready right at the very end, and then Amazon announced they were coming to Australia. And everyone said, well, they're going to annihilate you. So our revenue in the meantime between not listing then and listing went from 80 million to 200 million, and Amazon didn't annihilate us. But we were able to do our IPO in 11 weeks because we had already had a go at it 4 years before. Mm-hmm. So we would have missed the boat if that was our first time. So. Mm. It's one of those things. I can't. Like, we wouldn't be where we are today if we hadn't had those lessons. So
you wouldn't do any of them differently because that's what got you to where you are now.
That's correct.
Question number four. What's one thing on your bucket list that you have yet to tick off?
In terms of my life or as in Booktopia?
As broad as you would like. I'd like life. I think that would be very
interesting. Yeah, I think I'd like to go to Antarctica. I've been to all the other continents.
Yeah.
So my son and I have talked about that. And that would be pretty cool. So there's a few places that, because I traveled around the world from 23 to 27 and I got to see a lot over those years working and traveling and then to then do it with my son and maybe even my stepdaughter. My wife says it's too cold for her.
I think I'm in the same boat as your wife, which would not be the boat to Antarctica.
Yeah. So in terms of business, look, to get to $1 billion in revenue and to have accomplished that is one of the things still on my list. So to keep working through the 200 to 300, 300, 400. I mean, it's interesting when I talk to the Entourage and other companies, they talk about how do you get to seven figures? How do you get to eight figures then? You know, for me it was how do you get to nine and then how do you get to 10 figures?
Yeah.
And so it's that same, but a lot of people aren't thinking about that. They're not they're thinking, oh, I've just got to get to eight figures. It's like, well what about nine? Yeah. And what about 10?
Yeah. Well, but breadcrumbs, right? Got to take each step. Final question. If someone wants to become an industry leader, what's one thing they need to do to make it happen?
Do not focus on being an industry leader. Like that is not self-appointed.
Yeah.
That is appointed by others.
Yeah.
So by doing what you do, say like in the book industry for me, it's like I never go, oh, great, I want to be an industry leader. Am I?
Yeah.
Like at the end of the day, am I really an industry leader, or would someone look at it and go, well, he's not really, you know, he just has a, you know, just an e-commerce site and blah, blah, blah. And so it's just one of those things that's not self-appointed, in my opinion. So.
Yeah, and it's also like why? Just for the sake of being it? Or so you're
well, it's kind of like if you wanted to be, say, the world's greatest racing car driver, for example.
Which I also would like to be.
Oh, there you go. All right, good luck. Reincarnation, and maybe you'll get there. But the thing is that like to be the greatest driver of all time, you need, you know, one lap doesn't make a race. One race doesn't make a season. One season doesn't make a career. One career, you know, doesn't even make you the world's greatest. So within all of the, you know, the breadcrumbs, within all the strain, there are certain things that would happen along the way that you can't take one out and go. So it's just one of those things where you, the summation of it all, at the end of the day, like if you play golf, it's in every shot that you're, that's where your career or the greatest resides.
Yeah, so if you do want to become the leader in the industry, it's actually focusing on all the shots. Like line them all up, or focus on all the races, line them all up.
It's like, imagine, being a racing car driver and going, all right, that was the best overtaking maneuver I've ever done in my life. You know, like you do not have time to even consider that because you're taking the next turn or whatever it's going to be. Like maybe at the end of the race or at the end of the season, you might look back at, but you're in the car and you're racing and in business, it's the same. So there's no time to sit there and really think about what you just accomplished. Someone asked me once in the last year or so, what's your definition of success? And my definition is that whatever milestone you just achieved, when you look in the rear vision mirror, it's long gone.
Awesome. That is a great place to finish up. Tony Nash, we've covered some awesome stuff. There are a bunch of analogies in there I'm going to steal with absolute pride. I really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you for being on.
Great to be here. Again, look forward to maybe even a part two or part three. Happy to come back anytime.
Great. That'll be awesome. Thank you. Thanks for tuning in to the Make It Happen show, brought to you by our team at The Entourage, Australia's leading business coaching and training provider. We're on a mission to empower entrepreneurs by giving them everything they need to build great businesses and live meaningful lives. If you got something out of this episode, picked up a great takeaway, or just want to say hi, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes or let us know at The Entourage Official on all social platforms. We'd love to hear from you. Catch you in the next episode with our next guest right here. Bye for now.